Welcome to the What Are Poems podcast, the only poetry podcast not seeped in pretension. I'm your host, Jake. My fan is clinking and clattering up there, my ceiling fan. What about ceiling fans? Good God, do we owe them a debt, huh? The old girls. Don't you picture them as old girls? Just like one of those big old girls. Like, I picture a ceiling fan, like if it's Beauty and the Beast and a ceiling fan comes to life, it's like a haggard old 300-pound woman who's just breathing heavy from just rotating her whole life, you know? Like your teapot comes alive. It's like Mrs. Potts from the show there, singing her songs. Tale as old as time, you know? Or the French candlestick. Imagine if the ceiling fan came to life. It's going,
I'm so tired. I've been on for 17 years.
It's true. I just shut the ceiling fan off. The ceiling fan's been on for 5 months, constantly running. Because I'll sit here and I'll go, ooh, I'd like a little breeze. I'd like to cool down a little bit. And there's the ceiling fan.
I'll keep going, Jake.
It's really the most lovely appliance, you know? It's really the most, what did DMX used to say? Down ass bitch. Was that it? I don't know. I don't follow DMX. But when DMX died, I hope that they had all sorts of ATVs running down the road, you know? I said that the other day when we were driving, because now down the street, a couple houses down, the people don't have, I guess they don't have a Bluetooth speaker, or they don't even have an old-timey stereo. So what they do is they pull their, they have a Camaro, and they pull that up in the middle of the street, and they open the doors, and they just play their music from their car. They just crank the volume in the car, and that's their stereo system. So every day you gotta drive by, like, you gotta drive around basically their portable jukebox. And why was I saying that about the cars? Oh, so then you got that going on, and then there's like ATVs that go up and down my street all the time, and people on motorcycles, and young children in the street with sparklers and cherry bombs, and Dolores up the street, the old woman who just kind of leans there and goes, how's Sarah? I go, I don't know, Dolores, I gotta go to work. How's Sarah? I don't know, Dolores, I gotta go to work.
Tell her I said hello. Her grandfather saved my life when I fell on the sidewalk.
Dolores is my ceiling fan, basically. But no, she fell. Dolores fell about, I don't know, a century ago. And Sarah, my girlfriend's grandfather, rescued Dolores. So every now and then she'll say,
how's Sarah? Her grandfather rescued me when I fell a century ago. When I was a ceiling fan. When I was your ceiling fan, Jake. Your memories are just memories of your memories.
Dolores, please don't do this to me, Dolores. Don't do this to me, Dolores. But anyway, I said, hey, it's like we live in a DMX video. That's what I said to my friend. I said, it feels like we live in a DMX video. Isn't that nice? Isn't that different? Better than living in who had like a Nine Inch Nails video, cartoon clowns chasing you, getting your eyeballs ripped out. Then a Stranger Things, it was excellent. Hey, today on What Are Poems is what we're gonna do is the old Francis Scott Key, the Star Spangled Banner, the history, the controversy, the whole story, you know, exciting stuff. Also, well. I'll be back. I was wrong. It wasn't DMX. It was Ja Rule who said down-ass bitch. And according to Urban Dictionary, down-ass bitch, the one that has your back when no one else will. A woman that is faithful and committed to you without a title. A woman that will go out, get her money, and bring it back. The woman that loves you for the person you are before you can even imagine loving her. The one that does everything in her power to run other bitches off. A woman that makes love to you like no other woman can. The one willing to do anything to keep you. She is also the woman who will eventually have your heart. So, it's disturbing, it's sweet, It's Ja Rule's way of thinking, not mine, so please no emails about that. Oh, there's a beetle. I'm going to tell you about the beetle, and then I'll get into the Star-Spangled Banner. Last night, we were sitting here watching something on TV. Oh, Only Murders in the Building. Do you watch that with Steve Martin? Wonderful little show. And we start hearing bing, psh, bing, psh, bing, psh. And I'm like, oh, a fly must be somewhere in here. And then I look up, and Sarah's going, what is it? What is it? I go, oh, my God, I don't know. I thought maybe it was a freaking bat. So I turn the light on. It's a beetle. It's a little orange beetle. And I said, oh, it's got to be one of them Red Lantern flies. She said, no, it's not polka dotted. You got to do something. What are you, afraid of the beetle? You never saw a beetle? She's like yelling at me about this beetle. And I sat up and I'm thinking, I'm the one getting up and even investigating this beetle. You're cowering under the covers. Gert, our 100-year-old cat, hasn't even looked up from her paws in 7 days to see what the hell's going on. Like, engage with the world every now and then, Gert. But anyway, so then the beetle, it's thumping around. It's really making a lot of noise. The thing had to be the size of a freaking quarter. I don't care who you are, even if you're a freaking what are they called? Entomologist? The bug people? You'd be looking at this thing going, what is that? So I'm just curious. Like, I never saw a beetle like this. I'm like looking at it. She's going, kill it! Kill the beetle! So I just kind of flicked it. I didn't kill it. I just kind of flicked it. So it's still in the house probably. But it'll probably come again tonight and scare the hell out of us. Man, it was a big beetle. The size of a quarter. So here's the story, the Star-Spangled Banner story. Let's start. It's written by... Well, first let's start with this Anacreon. Do you know him? He's a Greek lyric poet. He's notable for his drinking songs and erotic poems. That's the Greeks for you. He's later added to the 9 canonical poets by the Greeks. Whenever I talk about Greece, I get like it's very hard for me to talk. Like now, since we did that Ovid episode about the erotic Ovid poems, I start sweating when I drive by Nico Gyro King down there on by the old Kmart. That means nothing to anyone, but there's a guy who parks a gyro truck in the old abandoned Kmart parking lot. And whenever I drive by it now, I think about how I couldn't speak during that Ovid episode, and I got all the Greek words wrong. And I'm like, I bet Greek people hate me, you know? And then our guy got buried. Rupert Brooke got buried in Greece, you know, and I could hardly pronounce any of that. I'm just not good at pronouncing things. I'm from the Valley. Me and my friend Liz once went to a linguistics meeting at the library about why the people that live here sound like we sound. And, they couldn't crack it. They couldn't figure it out. They're like, no, you guys just sound weird. We don't know. He's like, I'm a linguist. I worked with a linguist. I went to UPenn trying to figure out what this accent is you guys have, and I can't figure it out. They think it might be kind of Chicago because a lot of the people split. They either came to Wilkes-Barre or they went to Chicago. So I think maybe it's kind of like that accent. Not that that matters. We're talking about Anacreon. He wrote all his poetry in ancient Ionic dialect. And basically, this guy just writes these drinking poems, these love poems, and later on, hundreds of years later, what happens is these songs start popping up, Anacreic songs, and they become the official songs of Anacreic societies, which are basically like just drinking, just like, you know how we'd have a bar now, like a corner bar? These are just like men, they go to these little rooms, and they sing the songs, and they all talk, and they have their little societies dedicated to a man who wrote erotic poems, which is, you know, isn't that what we have now? Isn't that what the Playboy Club became at one point eventually? Isn't that like a club? I'm having a nice seltzer. Isn't that like what that was? Just a club dedicated to, well, like jazz music. And attractive women. So that's what they're doing in Britain, in old London town. And one of these Anacreic societies, they make this song called "To Anacreon in Heaven." It's composed by John Strafford Smith. Okay. The lyrics are by the head of the society. So this Smith, he's an English composer, organist, and musicologist, and he's one of the first serious collectors of the manuscripts and works of Johann Sebastian Bach. Smith is best known for writing the music that would eventually become the patriotic song, the Star-Spangled Banner, following the War of 1812, and 1931 was adopted as the national anthem of the United States. So this guy's pretty much a fuddy-duddy, from what I could tell. I don't like to throw that word around and call people fuddy-duddies, but this guy's, he doesn't get married. He just plays the organ, likes to be in this society that's dedicated to a man who wrote odes on the pleasure of love and wine. But his song becomes popular in Britain and America following the establishment of antiquarian societies in England and America, the New World. Not much ever happened to him. He just stays an organist, does well being an organist, and then he dies at 86. He's got the USA flag and the UK flag on his tombstone. It is often said that Smith's death was caused by a grape pip lodged in the windpipe. And they also believe that Anacreon, the Greek poet, also died from eating a grape. So that would be something. If this guy wrote the song about the man and they both choked on a grape to die. I mean, there's the good story in the Star-Spangled Banner legend so far. Careful when you eat grapes. They say in England they call it a grape pip. And then in Greece they said it's a grape stone. Which is crazy. If you know that there's like a thing inside the grape, don't just swallow it whole, fellas. At 86, you choke on a grape. That's what I always talk about, don't I? Don't I say that a lot? What the hell is life? You're cruising along. You're writing a song that's going to become the national anthem of the U.S. of a country with its own set of problems that we're not going to get into today. We're not going to be overly patriotic, but we're also not going to, shit on everything forever and always. Because there are some good things that happen in America. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but I'm sure something happened. We had a World's Fair once, didn't we? Oh, you know what? No. I can't think of anything too good. Maybe at the end I'll think of a few good things, but I can't think of anything right now. But anyway, so they both choked on grapes. Now, fast forward to a boat. A boat outside the British bombardment of Fort McHenry in 1814 during the War of 1812. So when people say, when was the Star-Spangled Banner written? During the War of 1812, but it was 1814. So he's inspired by seeing the American flag still flying over the fort at dawn and wrote the poem Defense of Fort McHenry. It was published within a week with a suggested tune of the popular song, yes, you got it, Anacreon in Heaven. The song with Key's lyrics became known as the Star-Spangled Banner and slowly gained in popularity as the unofficial anthem, finally achieving official status more than a century later under President Herbert Hoover as the national anthem. So Hoover blankets, Hoover flags, that's when your pockets are pulled out and there's no money, it's just your pocket floating, because everyone was mad at Hoover for making the world depressed. But really, we all know it was Jazz Age lunatic Calvin Coolidge and his crazy spending policies that sent us into a depression. Not old Herb Hoove. So, I mean, if people think it's Herb Hoove, get over it. It's Coolidge. It's Coolidge going, jazz, baby, jazz. So, wait. I did want to play here's the Anacreon song for you. Here we go, folks. Now, the lyrics are bullshit. The lyrics aren't good. To Anacreon in heaven, where he sat in full glee, a few sons of harmony sent a petition that he their inspirer and patron would be. When this answer arrived from the jolly old Grecian. I mean, it's like, Jesus, what was that guy writing about? Billy Joel, you know, Billy Joel notoriously doesn't feel great about his songwriting or singing abilities, but he beat the shit out of that guy, I'll tell you what. If you're listening to this, Billy Joel, what if Billy Joel is one of my listeners? Holy shit. So anyway, Francis Scott Key, basically a little bit about him. He's just, he's a lawyer. He was a commissioned officer in the Continental Army and a judge of English descent. When he's writing that Star Spangled Banner, it's because during the War of 1812, Key and British prisoner exchange agent Colonel John Stuart Skinner dined aboard a boat as the guest of Vice Admiral Alexander Cochrane, Rear Admiral George Cockburn, and Major General Robert Ross. George Cockburn, Jesus Christ. Imagine him going to school in the 90s. They'd be beating him up. They'd be going, "Hey, Cockburn! Is your cock burning?" You remember how kids used to be. Are they still like that? I don't think they bully each other. They just bully adults. Skinner and Key were there to negotiate the release of William Beans. Bennis, probably. Now Beanus. Beans, a resident of Upper Marlboro, Maryland, who had been arrested after arguing with British troops who had attempted to plunder his estate. Skinner, Key, and Beans were not allowed to return to their own sloop because they had become familiar with the strength of the position of the British units and their intention to launch an attack upon Baltimore. And Key was unable to do anything but watch the bombardment of the American forces at McHenry during the Battle of Baltimore on the night of September 13th through 14th, 1814. At dawn, Key was able to see the American flag waving, and he later wrote a poem about their experience entitled Defense of Fort McHenry, which was published in William Pynchon's American and Commercial Daily Advisor. So, I mean, geez, what a place to get it published. It's not the Times, I'll tell you that. So he took it to music publisher Thomas Carr, who adapted it to the rhythms of composer John Stafford Smith's and Crayon in Heaven, the popular tune that Key had already used as a setting for his 1805 song, When the Warrior Returns, celebrating American heroes of the First Barbary War. It was somewhat difficult to sing, yet became increasingly popular, competing with Hail Columbia as the de facto national anthem by the time the Mexican-American War and the American Civil War. The song was finally adopted as the American national anthem more than a century later. The third verse of the Star-Spangled Banner makes disparaging mention of blacks and demonstrates Key's opinion of their seeking freedom at the time by escaping to the British, who promised them freedom from American enslavement. So, you know, everyone's a shithead. Everyone's shit. That's why people don't like it. But let's just tell you a little bit about, Key purchased his first slave in 1800 or 1801 and owned six slaves in 1820. He freed seven of his slaves in the 1830s and owned eight slaves when he died. One of his free slaves continued to work for him for wages at his farms, as his farm's foreman, supervising several slaves. He also represented several slaves seeking their freedom, as well as several slave owners seeking return to their runaway slaves. So he's a... He was one of the executors of John Randolph of Roanoke's will, which freed his 400 slaves, and Key fought to enforce the will for the next decade and to provide the free slaves with land to support themselves. So he has slaves, but he helps slaves. He's just not chill with the slave thing. He's chill and not chill. He's, I don't know. He's a man living in that time. They don't, it's just awful. Everything in America that you try to like always comes down to a terrible thing where it's at the expense of minorities and women, which is insane. But anyway, that's how it all got started. That's how he wrote the song. And then let's see here where I have it. So the song gains popularity throughout the 19th century, and bands played it during public events such as Independence Day celebrations. A plaque displayed at Fort Meade, South Dakota, claims the idea of making the Star-Spangled Banner the national anthem began on their parade ground in 1892, when Caleb Carlton, post commander, established the tradition that the song be played at retreat and at close of parades and concerts. Carlton explained the custom to Governor Sheldon of South Dakota, who promised me that he would try to have the custom established among the state militia. Carlton wrote that after a similar discussion, Secretary of War Daniel S. Lamont issued an order for it to be played at every army post every evening at retreat. In 1899, the U.S. Navy officially adopts the Star-Spangled Banner. In 1916, President Woodrow Wilson ordered the Star-Spangled Banner to be played at military and other appropriate occasions. The playing of the song 2 years later during the seventh inning stretch of Game 1 of the 1918 World Series, and therefore and thereafter during each game of the series is often cited as the first instance that the anthem was played at a baseball game. No evidence shows that the Star Spangled Banner was performed as early as 1897 at the opening day ceremonies in Philadelphia and more regularly at the Polo Grounds in New York City beginning in 1898. In any case, the tradition of performing the national anthem before every baseball game began in World War II. So, that's it. That's all I got to say about that. It obviously causes a lot of problems in the NFL. Pop singer Christina Aguilera performed the wrong lyrics to the song prior to Super Bowl XLV. Yikes. Don't do Roman numerals. Replacing the song's fourth line for the Ramparts We Watch were so gallantly streaming with the altercation of the second lyric, "What so proudly we watch the twilight's last gleaming," so she fucked it up. Christina Ag, what are you doing, girl? Ooh. What was that song? "You're beautiful in every single way. Words can't bring me down." Okay, so here is the poem as we know it. "Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming? Whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight where the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming? And the rocket's red glare and the bombs bursting in air gave proof to the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does the star-spangled banner yet wave over the land of the free and the home of the brave? On the shore dimly seen through mist of the deep, where the foe's haughty host in dread silence reposes, what is that which the breeze or the towering steep, as it fitfully blows, half conceals, half discloses? Now it catches the gleam of the morning's first beam, in full glory reflected, now shines in the stream. 'Tis the star-spangled banner, oh, long may it wave over the land of the free and the home of the brave. And where is that band who so valiantly swore that the havoc of war and the battle's confusion, a home and a country, should leave us no more? Their blood is washed out, their foul footsteps pollution. No refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight or the gloom of the grave. And the star-spangled banner as triumph doth wave over the land of the free and the home of the brave. Oh, thus be it ever, when freedom shall stand between their loved homes and the war's desolation. Bless the victory and peace, may the heavens rescue land, praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. Then conquer we must when our cause is just, and this be our motto, in God is our trust. And the star-spangled banner as triumph shall wave over the land of the free and the home of the brave." So the first verse is actually the only good one, I would say. Okay, I'll be back. Skeletons in the closet all the time for all American heroes. I'm using the finger quotes there. You know, that is America then. That's what it is. It's a closet. It's a walk-in closet. A big walk-in closet with gowns and jewelry and a Bluetooth speaker. And it's always playing light Ella Fitzgerald tunes. And then you pull back the fur coats and there's just fucking skeletons. Just skeletons to the roof. And Jeff Bezos is there snickering in the corner.
"I'm Jeff Bezos. Bezos, precious."
That's what America is. Well, that's our little Star-Spangled Banner 4th of July Independence Day episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you have a good holiday weekend. If you're going to be out there protesting, go out there and protest, my people. Let America know that we know what America is. A walk-in closet filled with skeletons. Hey, you know what? To play us out, the best version of the Star-Spangled Banner. Go get your hot dogs. Go get your hamburgers. This is Marvin Gaye doing a 1983 NBA All-Star Game. The definitive version of the Star-Spangled Banner for me. Okay, folks, until next time, peace and love. Peace and love. Beef jerky. Stripes.